message is that we have to get parents over.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's just one of those things that's hardwired into a parent. You want your child to have it better, easier, whatever, than you did. That seems to be your goal, and in that goal you mistakenly try to shield your child from any kind of failure, and that's not really good for growth, is it?
No, it isn't, because kids need failure experiences, and they need to be able to step back and problem solve and how to be willing to take risk. The kids that are not willing to take risks don't do very well in life.
One last thing. How can parents help their kids develop a sense of self-identity?
Well, I think one of the ways, you know, is by letting them take risks and having them try on things. But I think one of the things is to notice, for parents to notice very closely what their kids do, what their kids like, and what their kids believe in.
Mm-hmm.
And when their kids do those things, to just notice it, comment on it. Because then the kid says, well, I kick a ball really well. Oh, yeah, I'm very kind to people that are hurting. Yes, okay. And as you give those messages to kids, just reflecting back who they are, the kids can internalize a positive sense of self and a positive identity.
Mm.
And when kids have that sense of self and it's strong, then they are much more willing to take risks and go out and be a force for positive change in the world.
Well, when some of these parents get their kids so involved with activities that the kid doesn't have time to be a kid, is that a parent trying to find an identity for the child, or what? I know that you say it's not good for the kids to be too involved.
No, I think having an overscheduled child is a problem, and it comes as a response, I think, of parental anxiety or parental guilt. And really, I think kids need downtime. Kids need unstructured time to play and just be kids. And it's okay to let a kid sit for a couple hours and just whittle away with things around at the house, play with whatever there, and use some imaginative play. They don't have to be in structured soccer, piano, and martial arts every hour of the waking day.
Yeah, I know a few kids that get put through schedules like that, and I just, you're preaching to the choir, as I said earlier. We're about out of time. My guest today has been Scott Shannon, Dr. Scott Shannon, who's just published a book, Please Don't Label My Child. It's published by Rodale Press. Scott, I'm assuming this is available in bookstores?
Bookstores and you know, online marketers like Amazon.com.
Okay, great. It was a fascinating read. Now I'm going to go back and try to pick up on some of the things that I had to skim through. But, Scott, good luck with the book. Thank you so much for being on the show with me today and sharing the ideas from your book, Please Don't Label My Child.
My pleasure, Terry. Happy to be with you.
Thanks you so much. You've been listening to Education Matters on WGTD, your gateway to classical music and news. I've been your host this week, Terry Lawler. Until next time, please take care.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:15 here on WGTD. For a listing of upcoming show topics and panelists, subscribe to WGTD's weekly electronic newsletter. Go to our website, www.wgtd.org, to sign up. That's www.wgtd.org. Your gateway to public radio is WGTD 91.1 FM.
This is the BBC Home Service. We're interrupting our programming to announce that a German atomic bomb carried by a German jet bomber airplane hit central London at approximately 600 Greenwich Mean Time today, 18th March 1944. The entire area from the East End to Whitehall has been completely obliterated, with fires breaking out surrounding Ground Zero. Emergency personnel, including American and Canadian troops, have been rushed in to assist with rescue efforts. Although news reports are very sketchy as of yet, We have confirmed that Prime Minister Churchill and the entire War Cabinet were at the secret headquarters and have not been harmed. Mr. Churchill has announced, though, that the royal family, including Their Majesties King George VI, Queen Elizabeth, and the Princesses Elizabeth and Margaret, have all perished. Prince Henry, the Duke of Gloucester, and the Governor General of the Dominion of Australia and younger brother of the late King will ascend the throne and is making plans to return to the United Kingdom, while the entire nation, indeed the entire civilized world, stays horrified at what Germany has done, it will make no matter to what will be Germany's eventual and utter defeat. As we learn more, we will convey to you the news as quickly as possible. God save the King.
Could Nazi Germany have developed the atomic bomb before the Americans? We know they had already developed jet fighters and had plans to build a bomber to reach New York. Their V-1 and V-2 rockets, precursors to today's cruise missiles and ballistic missiles, were already terrorizing England. Just how close were they to building the bomb and using it? If they had, England as we know it today would not have existed. No Queen Elizabeth II, no Prince Charles. No Diana, no Tower of London, no Parliament on the Thames. The WGDT Radio Theater is proud to present The Catcher and the Spy. We will follow Catherine McPherson again as she works with the real-life character, Mo Berg, catcher for the Cleveland Indians and other teams, and an OSS spy, as he seeks to learn just how close the Nazis were to discovering the secrets of the atomic bomb. The WGTD Radio is brought to you through the generous underwriting of the law firm of O'Connor, Dumais, Aaliyah, and McTiernan in Kenosha, the Westosha Veterinary Hospital in Salem, and Agape Chiropractic in Lake Villa. And now, please join us for the world premiere of Catcher in the Spy, written and created by Stephen Brown and Michael Alstrup. It's mid-1943, and Winston Churchill is discussing the situation with Alan Dulles, head of the American Office of Strategic Service, the OSS, in Europe.
I just received Mo's latest report. We still have no idea just how close the Germans are to developing an atom bomb.
Alan, we have to find out what the Germans are really up to with their atomic bomb project. You know, Mo Berg's intelligence about Norway certainly was important to our bombing the heavy water plant over here, but they still were able to salvage some of the equipment and take it back to Germany.
Yes, Prime Minister. And when I sent Mo to Naples to find out what the Italian physicists were up to, we wound up finding out nothing at all. The scientists were all moved up to German-occupied Rome.
Yes. As I heard, he was recognized on the street corner in Naples by some Americans. He really needs to work more on his cover. No matter how perfect his Italian, it can't change how he looks. And leave it to you Yanks to recognize baseball players halfway around the world.
Yes, that was cutting it a bit too close. That's like Mo, though. He gets his job done regardless of the risk.
Well, I know I don't have to tell you that London is in Mr. Hitler's sights. We can't have one of his rockets come down on us here with an armed bomb in it. The V-attacks are bad enough. We can't imagine what one of those bombs would do to us.
Yes, Prime Minister. Of course, we still don't know if Heisenberg would actually go ahead and make the bomb. There's some speculation that he has more of a conscience and won't give the bomb to Hitler. All Niels Bohr knew from his meeting with Heisenberg in Copenhagen in 1941 was that the Germans had built a chain reacting pile. Some kind of falling out happened at that meeting, though, and he won't tell us any more than the facts as he found them out. We asked him several times about it, just refuses to talk. Something happened at that meeting, though, that has Bohr furious, or scared.
Well, gossip and speculation aren't going to help you sleep at night. Just do whatever you can to find out what is going on. Have you seen my cigar, by any chance?
Back in Washington, Bill Donovan, director of the OSS, and Edwin Ned Putzel, his chief aide, are engaged in a discussion about Germany's atomic research with Mo Berg.
Mo, you did a great job on a report on the Norwegian plant. I think this last attack did the trick.
Thank you, sir. The Nazis did get some equipment out, though.
True, but we're wearing them down. As we know with what we have going on in Los Alamos, it isn't all that easy to make a bomb, and taking out little pieces will have big impacts.
What we need to find out, though, is whether or not Heisenberg knows how to build a bomb, and then would he?
I don't know, sir. I'll need to head back to Europe to find that out.
Understood. Just do a better job with your cover. I'm getting reports all over the world that you're being recognized. Not the kind of call we want to get from Churchill. The Brits think we're a bunch of amateurs in the first place. We don't need any goof-ups like that to get in the way. Besides, you're one of the best agents we have, and we need you playing ball when this is all over.
One thing at a time, sir. I'll be on my way then.
Good luck to you.
Good luck, Mo.
So, Ned, what are your girls up to? Well, we need some help over there. What's that Catherine up to?
She's at Bletchley Park helping with translating Enigma intercepts for the Brits.
She's capable of more than that, even if she is a woman. Her German's still perfect.
Yes, sir.
Good. Get her to Switzerland now.
Ma'am, a gentleman named Ned has asked for you to join me.
Understood. I was wondering when I would hear from him. How have you been, Sergeant? It's been a while. Can I at least grab a few things from my apartment?
Sorry, ma'am. I have orders to get you on an airplane without delay.
Oh, okay. I figured as much. Just thought I'd try and travel like a regular person for once.
Not regular times, though, ma'am.
How well I know.
Cup of coffee, ma'am?
Special blend again?
Not this time, ma'am. This is a quicker flight. Here's a package for you now that we're in the air an hour.
Thank you, Sergeant. Let's see what Ned has me off doing this time.
Catherine, I have an important mission for you, one that the director himself wants you on. You may have seen some of the intelligence reports coming through Bletchley about Norway and heavy water. Until we finally put an end to that plant, the Germans are manufacturing heavy water there for use in the development of a weapon of unimaginable proportions. German physicists, under the leadership of Werner Heisenberg, are working to create an atomic bomb. Such a bomb, just one bomb, would have the destructive power of thousands of tons of TNT and leave an aftermath of inconceivable fires, maiming, burns, radiation, and death. We cannot allow the Germans to have such a weapon. With their V-2 rockets, they are already hitting London. An atomic bomb dropped on London could quickly change the outcome of this war. Some background on Heisenberg. He is a Nobel Prize winner in physics and is recognized as one of the world's foremost geniuses. He scared us with his statement in 1942 that an atomic bomb could be developed that would be no larger than a pineapple. He was good friends, in fact close friends, with Niels Bohr in Denmark. For some reason, the two had a falling out in 1942, and Bohr is not talking about it. There are other scientists in England and the U.S. that doubt that Heisenberg would ever give Hitler the bomb. Human ego and wanting to be the first To make such a bomb may well override any political leanings or moral concerns. We have to find out what he knows, what he doesn't, and how close he is to achieving his goals. Catherine, you have been chosen to help get this information.
Here we go again.
You will arrive in Switzerland and work with Mo Berg. Alan Dulles will meet you at the airport and introduce you to Mo. Just so you know, some consider Mo a little strange. Not a big talker, keeps to himself. He is fluent, though, in many European and Asian languages. In fact, he corrects the Japanese in their own speech. Never doubt, though, for one second that he knows exactly what he is doing, and his focus is singular, finding out how close Hitler is to having his bomb. One last thing. If you determine that Heisenberg does know how to create an atomic bomb, you are authorized to kill him with whatever means necessary.
Ma'am, if you're done with that letter, I'll need to destroy it.
Oh, yes, Sergeant, of course. Here.
We'll be landing soon. Good to have you back in Switzerland, Catherine.
Good to be back, Mr. Dulles.
Private, let's get going. I was glad to hear you were assigned to this case, Catherine. The situation is too serious to have no one but our best.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you, sir.
You will spend the night at the embassy and on to your assignment tomorrow morning. You will read some briefing materials and learn about your cover tonight. You will speak only German when you leave tomorrow, and your name will be Wilhelmina Earhart. You will be secretary working in the physics department at the Federal Institute of Technology here in Zurich. You will go to Professor Paul Scherer's office at the Institute and meet Mo there. Scherer is a Swiss, but is trusted.
Mo won't be at the embassy?
No, there's no reason for him to be there. He's more freelance here with little connection to me. I do what I can when he allows it.
Okay.
Your password is uncertainty when he says principal. Mo will have further instructions for you. Any questions so far?
Well, how will I leave the embassy without being noticed? I mean, the city is still calling with FS.
Oh, yes, we're still playing our cat and mouse games with them. That's why you will hide in the bakery truck that delivers bread to the embassy every morning. It backs up into the building, so you will be able to get in the back without being noticed. The driver is one of ours. His next delivery is the railway station, where you will exit the little bakery shop there and proceed to the train bound for Zurich. It's a fairly short train ride to Zurich. Once you are there, you will depart the train as Wilhelmina, walking back to the Institute with some baked goods for the professor. Mo will be at his office. It will be tricky, but just make sure your cover is solid, and it should work out fine. We don't want to raise any suspicions.
Well, it's understood. It'll be a piece of cake. May I help you? Are you waiting for the professor? I just stepped out to get some strudel for him.
Yes, I'm here to discuss a principle with him.
You mean uncertainty?
Good. It is you. Let's go into the professor's office. He won't be in until after lunch. Have a seat. As you know, we need to find out about Heisenberg knows about making a bomb. My good friend, Professor Paul Scherer, is hosting a lecture series on the day after tomorrow and invited Heisenberg to speak. Amazingly, he's coming. You and I will attend the lecture and determine the risk. Your German is obviously impeccable, but can you handle scientific vocabulary? I mean, you are only a secretary, but you at least need to be able to handle the words, know how to spell them, etc.
Well, oh yes, even a little secretary such as I can spell thermal nuclear in German.
I didn't mean to offend. This just has to be flawless. Too much is at stake. There will be SS all over the place at this lecture.
I do understand that, Mr. Berg. Hitler has killed millions so far, and he wouldn't hesitate to incinerate millions more with a bomb on London or Moscow. I'm not exactly new to this.
Again, I apologize. Here are some more briefing materials to give you more background on the physics of the bomb. Heisenberg, some of the other players, what we know about the Nazi efforts to date, and what we have to do to counter them. Study this before we go to lectures and then burn them. Here's a special fountain pen for you. Are you familiar with it?
Yes, I've used one before. Still only one bullet in it?
Yes, they haven't figured out how to put a clip in yet.
Well, you probably aren't far from the truth, though.
I will have a pistol in my shoulder holster under my jacket.
Won't they search us when we walk in?
Maybe. Usually they aren't worried at these kind of events. After all, we will all be there in the pursuit of further academic knowledge.
Right.
And here's your cyanide pill.
I know how to use that, too.
I think you will enjoy this restaurant. It's a favorite of Americans here in Bern. The Germans tend to frequent the Hotel Schweizerhof. The Poles like the Café du Théâtre, and we like the Bellevue here. Of course, you never know who will be sitting next to you at the other table.
Yes, Switzerland certainly has an interesting cast of characters running around. Spies from all over the world.
Yes, exactly. As well as refugees, artists, and musicians trying to escape. I keep to myself, usually. I do have some dinners with Paul and his wife, an occasional ski trip with them. They've been such good friends. But other than that, I find it easier to avoid problems by avoiding people.
I understand that feeling. Easier to stay focused and aware, especially when you can really trust no one.
Odd business we're in, isn't it?
Yes, I suppose so, but then again, I felt called to it in some respects that I had to do whatever I could to support our cause. There'll be time after the war for a normal life, although not, of course, that you had what I would consider a normal life.
What do you mean?
Well, baseball catcher is not what I would consider a typical kind of a job.
No, I suppose not. I do miss it, that's for sure.
About Mo Berg's baseball career and just how he got involved with Wild Bill Donovan's OSS. Some people call Mo's life both mysterious and strange. In fact, Mo's baseball card is on display today at CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia. Here's sports writer Jimmy Breslin talking about Mo's first day as a catcher for the White Sox.
Well, you know, the day after making his catching debut, Mo started behind the plate as the White Sox beat the Yankees 6-3. But besides going 1-for-4, he competently handled Ted Lyon's dazzling array of pitches, including that hard-to-hit knuckleball. He also made a spectacular play, scooping an offline throw from the outfield, spinning and tagging Joe Dugan, who was then trying to score.
But that wasn't the only thing that Breslin remembers.
Well, you know, that's right. You know, Berg was a favorite of all of us sports writers, and, well, sometimes he liked to exaggerate about his linguistic skills, sometimes claiming to speak as many as 27 languages fluently. The most transparent of his boasts was that he spoke Sanskrit, one of those dead languages, you know, and maybe, just maybe, he could write and speak Sumerian.
Berg is far from a household name when it comes to baseball fans, but his story is just as fascinating as any Hall of Famer who has entered the hallowed shrine in Cooperstown. Once again, Jimmy Breslin.
Well, you know, I know that this story is all about the catcher and the spy and how Mo helps Catherine and the OSS, but just indulge me just a second to talk about sports. Mo's major league career spanned the years 1923 to 1939, serving the large part of that time as a backup catcher for, I think, 5 different teams. He was known primarily for his defense, setting the American League record at the time, of course, for consecutive errorless games at 117. In 15 seasons, he only got 441 hits, had a batting average of .243, and a grand total of 6 home runs. Berg may have been an average big leaguer, but he became known as one of the most unique individuals to ever put on a uniform.
Jimmy, what made Mo so different?
Well, you know, I'm glad you asked that question. I think what separated Mo from other ball players was his intelligence. Yeah, that's what it was. He was known as the brainiest player in the game, and even the flamboyant Casey Stengel The famous Yankee manager described Moe as the strangest man ever to play baseball.
Let's get back to Moe and Catherine in that restaurant.
More wine?
Well, I suppose that's all I can have here, no matter how good my German is. Asking for a bourbon would raise some suspicions.
No doubt. Or at least no more suspicion than if I walked around with a baseball bat.
Danke. It is safe to talk here?
Oh, yes. Softly and in German. Maybe looking like we're flirting some?
Looking like?
It's all for a good cause.
Now, there's a line for God and country. Well, seriously, though, it must have been something to have been playing with the likes of Babe Ruth or Lou Gehrig, Gabby Hayes, Lefty Gomez.
Oh, yes, I suppose. The Babe was one of my closest friends. He actually trusted me to go out with his daughter. We could tell each other anything, and did.
Like?
Now, ask me no questions, I'll tell you no lies.
Well, I suppose it's no good to try and interrogate an, colleague.
No, ma'am.
Well, that trip to Japan, though, had to be interesting. I doubt that I'll get over to Asia anytime soon, at least until the war is over. I seem to be slotted for the European theater for the duration.
Your languages are all European?
Yes, German and French. From what I was told, though, you speak a few Asian languages. Did you actually correct the Japanese when they were speaking?
Well, they were polite enough to accept it. It was all part of the exchange. During that trip in 34, trying to help bridge some of the differences. It was a good try, trying to build on the commonalities. And we brought with us so many of the players that they liked so much, we filled the stadiums everywhere we went. The Japanese were drifting down a different path, though, and no amount of special baseball tours was going to change that.
Well, okay, I'll ask. Did you really take photographs of the Tokyo skyline from the rooftop of a hospital?
Well, if you know that much, I don't need to answer.
Doggone. I guess that calls for another glass of wine.
Certainly. How's your dinner?
Excellent. It certainly hits the spot after living in England. The shortages have really hit them hard.
I don't think it's the lack of imported foods that has anything to do with their fine English cuisine.
Well, I was trying to be nice.
Language got you recruited?
I suppose. You?
I suppose.
I heard your radio address to the people of Japan in 42 to lay down their arms.
Yes, Donovan's idea. I guess it didn't work. All I got for those people was for their baseball to be banned.
But if it helps see once again what their government is really doing, it may help end the war sooner.
Perhaps.
Tell me more about our friend Werner. The briefing materials were more about the obvious facts, you know, birth date, schooling, public career. I'd like to hear more of your perspective. Just who it is that we're up against.
Well, the basics again. Born in Germany, 1901, son of a university professor. Married several children. I think he has one on the way again. Was involved in some youth groups after the First World War. Part of the group that ousted the communists from Bavaria. Very involved with groups trying to rebuild Germany after the war. Got his doctorate in 1923, barely, at the University of Munich.
Barely?
Yes. Only just passed it. Neglected some of his lab work. Went to Copenhagen as a guest lecturer, worked with Bohrs there. Became, or should I say, was, close friends with Niels Bohr of Denmark. They collaborated for years. He looked at Bohr as a mentor, even after he won the Nobel Prize. He won that prize in 32, basically for his creation of quantum mechanics. He wrote that paper back in 1925 when he was only 23. I mean, this guy is a genius.
I'll say, but what exactly is quantum mechanics?
Well, I'm no physicist myself, but it has to do with the understanding of how atomic particles work with each other, which, of course, goes to how to split atoms.
And the uncertainty principle? By the way, clever password.
Hey, finally figured that one out, huh?
Oh, I knew about the principle, just not sure what it is.
It's about the fact that the more you know about the momentum of a particle, the less you know about its position.
You really are studied on all of this.
Have to be. Or at least as much as I need to know what I'm listening for, what to watch out for, how at least to sound like I know what I'm talking about.
Well, what all happened between him and Bohr?
Hard to say. Heisenberg took advantage of Germany's occupation of Denmark and visited Bohr in 41 in Copenhagen. Like I said, they were friends, so in some respect, it made sense for Heisenberg to pay a visit. At the same time, though, he may have tried to bounce some ideas off Bohr. After Bohr escaped to Sweden and then to the U.S., he told us that Heisenberg talked about some chain reaction pile they developed, but he didn't say anything else. Or perhaps Bohr won't tell us anymore.
Why do you say that?
Well, something happened at that visit. Two must have had a disagreement, an argument of some kind, because Bohr will say nothing about the visit. He gets very tight-lipped, angry. He says we know what he knows. His wife gets upset, too, telling us to leave her husband alone.
Interesting. Do you figure that they think Heisenberg knows what to do to build a bomb?
Hard to say. Heisenberg's willingness to build a bomb for Hitler has been the subject of intense speculation.
Well, he is a German, after all.
Exactly. He just might want Germany to be the first to have the bomb, even with Hitler in charge. All the major powers understand the potential of atomic fission. Heisenberg might rationalize dropping a bomb on London by thinking it would be no worse than the Allies dropping a bomb on Berlin. And would he want the Allies to have the ability to drop a bomb on his homeland in the first place?
Well, you never really know how ego can play with a person's mind. I mean, it would be quite a coup to go down in history as the inventor of the atomic bomb.
That's exactly right. Enrico Fermi actually put it directly to Heisenberg when they were both in the United States in 39. He asked Heisenberg, why would he go back to Germany? Why wouldn't he want to stay in the U.S.? After all, so many German scientists left for the United States and England during the 30s. Why wouldn't he want to be a part of that community where he could do what he wanted? He responded that he didn't want to abandon the younger physicists back in Germany. Besides, he said, that it would be such slow going to actually make an atomic bomb that any war would be over before it could be used.
Heisenberg probably saw that if he stayed in the U.S., he would be pressed hard to help the American effort, and he didn't want that either.
Perhaps. Though I guess it's hard for me to understand how anyone could allow Hitler to have such power. I mean, Heisenberg was already harassed by the Nazis for working with the so-called Jewish physics of Einstein and Bohr. He saw what happened to the Jews in Germany, and if any of these reports are right about these camps...
Oh, I know, but love of country can be hard to overcome. He probably just keeps rationalizing his efforts. When did he head up the German bomb efforts?
Right after he got back to Germany, when the war started. In spite of being considered Jewish physics, the Nazis understood the potential of Heisenberg's work and knowledge.
Do we have any indication of exactly what he is doing, though? I mean, could he be intentionally misleading the Germans?
It is a possibility. There are those who supposedly know Heisenberg, claim him as friends. They say he would never do such a thing. Give Hitler the bomb, that is. Although, at one time, Bohr thought that the bomb was an impossibility. That, too, might have swayed Heisenberg. Although, once the Germans discovered fission, everyone knew the implications were. We just don't know.
Does Professor Scherer host these lectures often?
Well, yes. But this one we concocted ourselves as a way to get Heisenberg here where we are.
Okay, I get it now. And Heisenberg took the bait.
Yes, he did. Let's just hope that we get out of him what we need to.
Agreed.
Well, we should finish up here. Have to catch the train to Zurich early tomorrow and attend Paul's lecture, and then deal with our friend, Herr Heisenberg.
Identification, please.
Here you are.
Fräulein?
Bitte.
You may pass.
See? No firearm search. Just sit as close to the front as possible.
Yes, mein Herr. Within easy range. When does Herr Heisenberg speak?
After lunch.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for such a warm welcome. Given the current circumstances in the world,
It has been difficult for me to travel and take part in the world of academia. I miss that camaraderie in the pursuit of knowledge. I'm grateful to my old friend Professor Scherer for inviting me here today and to be among such esteemed colleagues. Today, I wish to discuss quantum theory and its implications to particle physics.
It looks like he's going to stay true to his word and stick to physics, no politics.
Well, at least so far. No mentions either of uranium-235, heavy water, or atomic reactors.
I think that one of the Germans here, though, is listening to every word he says, too. No doubt to report to Berlin on everything he says.
Maybe he'll mention something in conversation later.
At dinner at Paul's. We'll see if he slips with a few cocktails in him.
Thank you. Thank you. I will be here in the lecture hall for a bit yet. I hope to talk to all of you.
Let's split up some. Try to pick up the conversations in the room, getting close to them as we can.
Could I get you a cup of coffee, mein Herr?
Why, yes. Thank you. I believe they're serving it over there.
I'll be right back.
Now, we're not here to discuss the war. I suppose we are losing the war, but how nice it would be if Germany had won it.
Did he say anything over there?
No, just kept saying how we're here to talk physics, not politics. He did say that they were losing the war.
Doesn't sound like he thinks that there's anything around the corner to turn the tide of the war.
We still have dinner to find out.
Now, my friends, I only agreed to be at this dinner if we did not talk politics and the war. After all, we live with it all the time. Certainly, we can go one evening without it. But if you insist on knowing what I am up to, I am working on the theoretical problems of ballistics. And as far as living in a Germany led by Adolf Hitler, I am not a Nazi, but a German. Friends, the evening grows late, and Paul, I do need to be on my way. I have an early train to catch in the morning. It's been such a lovely evening. Auf Wiedersehen.
Herr Heisenberg, I'll walk with you.
Okay. Glad to have the company.
You know your way back, Fräulein?
Yes, mein Herr. See you tomorrow at the university.
I apologize, but how do you know Paul again?
That's okay, Herr Heisenberg. I am one of Paul's students.
You sound Swiss?
Yes, I am. From Zurich, to be exact.
You enjoyed the lectures today?
Oh, yes, mein Herr. But why are you working on ballistics after all your physics work you've done?
Well, they are related at many levels, and, well, you know how it goes in the universities. You do what you are told.
Yes, mein Herr. I suppose that can be the case even for someone like you. It is wartime.
Yes.
Which university are you at?
Oh, I teach at several across the country. With the war, I am needed all over.
Teaching ballistics?
Well, I teach physics. I work on a theoretical ballistics project.
For the government?
Well, I'm not sure, but I suppose so. I was asked to do this by the university. I'm not sure who asked them.
It just seems so strange that they would have you working on that when you won the Nobel Prize for your physics work.
Well, whoever said that governments ever made sense?
I suppose you are right. Do you think that anyone else is close to building a bomb?
Well, I suppose one day. It's so hard to tell.
Why?
Well, there are a lot of manufacturing challenges. It is not just a matter of writing equations on a blackboard. One must have the right metals, in the right amounts, everything timed just so.
I suppose so, but scientists have been working on this for so long. At least, I would think so, and with the war and all, I would just think that someone would want that bomb.
Yes, well, wanting it is not the same as building it. It is entirely possible that the resource challenges actually become worse during wartime.
What kind of resources?
Well, here is my hotel. Thank you for the conversation on my walk back. It's been nice to have met you. The best of luck to you. Auf Wiedersehen.
Auf Wiedersehen, mein Herr.
May I help you?
I am here to see Professor Scherer again.
I'm sorry, he stepped out. You can wait in his office if you wish.
Danke.
I take it that you were satisfied that Heisenberg is not close to building a bomb.
Yes. Although he did not say anything specifically, he did seem resigned to the fact that Germany would lose the war. He also mentioned a few times about the practical challenges of making a bomb. He wouldn't really know about those if he had been confronting them.
We are hitting Germany pretty hard on all fronts.
Apparently so. Let's face it, if he was leading such an effort and making good progress, I doubt if the Nazis would have let him out of his house, let alone out of Germany.
So that Beretta you had under your jacket never got used?
No, it did not. I did have my hand on it, though.
Oh, and I had that pen in my hand ready, too, to take notes. Ned, make sure his girls are all well-trained.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, I need to get my report off to Washington, and you need to be on your way. How will you be leaving?
Wouldn't you like to know?
Yes, Prime Minister. We were all pleased with Moe's report.
Yes, I would like to...
Yes, sir.
This is great news. Let us pray that he is right. Send my best regards to the catcher.
Yes, sir, I will. I found your cigar.
Berg was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom on October 10, 1945, but refused the award. His sister later accepted it on his behalf after he died. His life following his service to his country was spent with family and friends, and he got by mostly because of his charm. He received many requests to write his memoirs, but never did, and died on May 29, 1972, from injuries sustained in a fall at home, thus taking many unanswered questions about his life with him. Although Berg's life has been the subject of much research and speculation, who the real Moe Berg was remains an eternal enigma, which fittingly is just how he seems to have wanted it. Finally, when he was criticized for wasting his intellectual talent on the sport he loved, Berg's response was, "I'd rather be a baseball player than a justice on the U.S. Supreme Court." This has been the world premiere of The Catcher and the Spy, created and written by Stephen Brown and Michael Alstrup. Our stars today from the 91.1 Players were Carolyn Recker as Catherine, John Kratzner as Moe Berg, Dan Sticca as General Bill Donovan, Bill Isley as Alan Dulles and Sergeant Wilson, Gary Stamm as Sir Winston Churchill, Mary Isley as the BBC announcer, Cameron Spencer as Ned Putzel, Mark Fraser as Werner Heisenberg and the police guard, and finally, I'm Jenny Tunkies, your host and narrator. Support for the WGTD Radio Theater comes from the Kenosha Law Firm of O'Connor, Dumay, Aaliyah, and McTiernan, the Westosha Veterinary Hospital in Salem, and the Agape Chiropractic Center in Lake Villa, Illinois. Be sure to join us on Saturday, October 27th at 11:15 for Sorry Wrong Number, starring Joan Rory. Rory recreates the original radio role as performed by Agnes Moorhead.
Hello? Hello? Oh, for heaven's sake, who is this? Hello? Hello? Hello?
Miss Rory will use Miss Moorhead's actual script. Except for a few minor parts, this will be a one-woman show. Again, please join us on October 27th for Lucille Fletcher's thriller, Sorry, Wrong Number. Our holiday show for this year is Miracle on 30th Avenue, which will have its world premiere on Saturday, December 15th. This original story, written by Stephen Brown and Michael Alstrup, is inspired by the famous short story and 1947 film Miracle on 34th Street, written by Valentine Davies. For the WGTD Radio Theater and the 91.1 Players, I'm Jenny Tunkies, thanking you for joining us today for the world premiere of Catcher in the Spy, written by Stephen Brown and Michael Alstrup. And now, here is Dr. Stephen Brown, executive producer and creator of the WGTD Radio Theater.
And thank you very much, Jenny. Our WGTD Radio Theater drama today, The Catcher in the Spy, is dedicated to Mr. Edwin Ned Putzel, who passed away in December of 2003. In doing the research for this story and our Secret Sisters from our first season, I had the honor of spending the day interviewing Ned at his home in Naples, Florida. Ned was in on the creation of the OSS back in 1937. Working as chief of staff and second in command of the OSS under General Bill Donovan. And finally, special thanks to my good friend and former OSS spy, Betty McIntosh, author of Sisterhood of Spies, who still resides in Leesburg, Virginia. Betty served as a special advisor to me and Michael Alstrup during our research of our Secret Sisters, and introduced me to Ned as well as some other OSS spies. For the WGTD Radio Theater, I'm Steve Brown.
By Eugene, let's see, pianist is Eugene Alcalay, and he'll have music by Schubert, Wagner, and Liszt. And then right after the Elvium concert, make that the Chazen concert, we will have our Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra concert. And tomorrow, Renee Fleming will be the guest soloist with the orchestra for music by Richard Strauss, Puccini, Dvorak, and Gounod. All of that tomorrow on Wisconsin Public Radio, and in our next hour of Classics by Request, we'll have music by Schubert, also John Philip Sousa, music by Deems Taylor, and more between 12 and 1 right after the news. What a nice day it is in Wisconsin. Sunny today, highs in the low to mid 70s. Tonight mostly clear, lows from the low 40s in the north to the low 50s in the west and south, and tomorrow, partly to mostly sunny, highs in the upper 70s to the mid-80s, cooler near the Great Lakes. There is a slight chance for thunderstorms tomorrow night in the northwest, otherwise partly cloudy central and southeast. 50s and 60s will be the temperatures overnight tomorrow night, and then Monday becoming mostly cloudy. Thunderstorms likely in the northwest, a chance for thunderstorms central and southeast. Highs on Monday from the mid-70s to the low 80s. So it looks like Wisconsin still has some pretty warm weather as we approach the early days of fall in Wisconsin. You're listening to Classics by Request. I'm Anders Yoakum. This is Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to WGTD, Kenosha, Racine, and Elkhorn, NPR News and Classical Music from Gateway Technical College.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Bush is fighting Democrats over a measure that he says looks a lot like a move toward completely federalized health care. Yesterday, a bipartisan group of lawmakers proposed a $35 billion boost over 5 years to the Children's Health Insurance Program, meant for families who can neither afford private coverage nor qualify for Medicaid. President Bush says the measure goes beyond SCHIP's mandate.
Health coverage for these children should not be held hostage while political ads are being made and new polls are being taken. Congress must pass a clean, temporary extension of the current SCHIP program that I can sign by September 30th.
President Bush in his weekly radio message. Pennsylvania Governor Ed Rendell says if President Bush vetoes the measure, 15 states will lose funding by month's end.
If the administration is serious about solving our health care crisis, it should be expanding, not cutting back this program, which has made private health insurance affordable for millions of children.
Rendell in the Democratic Party response. The House plans to vote on the measure Tuesday. The only one of the so-called Gina Six to stand trial will remain in jail after juvenile court denied his bail. Michael Bell, along with five other black teens, stand accused of beating a white classmate in a racially charged fight in the central Louisiana community of Gina. NPR's Audie Cornish has more. Thousands of protesters rallied in Jena this week, many wearing T-shirts that said Free the Jena Six. But Michael Bell remains in jail. He was convicted of battery this past summer for his role in a racially charged fight at the local high school. The incident followed weeks after some white students hung nooses from a tree on campus. A state appeals court overturned